Please join me in the responsive invocation which is in your order of service. We gather to seek, to find, and to share the promise of honest religion. And so it is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. Vulnerability more powerful than strength. It's a sacred time, this. Let's begin together in song. Our first reading this morning is by May Sarton and called All Souls. Did someone say there would be an end to love and mourning? Such voices speak when sleep and waking bend, the cold bleak voices of the early morning, when all the birds are dumb in dark November. Remember and forget, forget, remember. After the false night, warm true voices wake, voice of the dead that touches the cold living. Through the pale sunlight once most gravely speak. Tell me again while the last leaves are falling, dear child, what has been once so interwoven cannot be ravelled, nor the gift ungiven. Now the dead move through all of us still glowing, mother and child, lover and lover mated, are wound and bound together and in flowing. What has been plaited cannot be unplaited. Only the strands grow richer with each loss, and memory makes kings and queens of us all. Dark into light, light into darkness. When all the birds have flown to some real haven, we who find shelter in the warmth within, listen and feel now new cherished, new forgiven. As the lost human voices speak through us and blend our complex love, our mourning without end. We invite you now into a time of centering, a time of quiet reflection. This is a time to connect to that which is most important to you at this moment. In the tradition of the Mexican celebration of Day of the Dead, we invite you to commemorate friends and loved ones who are no longer with us by placing a memento, a note, or photograph on either of these altars. If you do not have a memento, we have flowers here for each altar that you may place in memory of someone who you love who is no longer with us. As is our regular tradition at this church, you may also light a candle by the window in remembrance or by sitting in quiet contemplation. I invite you to join me now in a time of prayer. At this time of year, nature and our mythology remind us of the cycles of life and death. Our environment seems less abundant as trees and plants prepare for winter, whereas many cultures in our world claim that the veil between the living and dead is thinner at this time. For those of us coping with loss of friends and loved ones, that thinness feels vast and thin. Vast because our relationship with those who have died has changed forever. Yet thin because our memory of the dead can keep them close and vital to us. The cherished memories of our loved ones who came before remind us of the love they gave us and our love for them. We are reminded by them that how we live today matters, not just to those with us today, but future generations. As those who came before us influenced us, then we will in turn influence those to come. If we influence others, it's not our choice, how we influence them is. Our time in this life is limited, but what we choose to give to others can be abundant. May our love and concern for others guide us in preserving their memories and values of all those who came before, and we may pass on to those who come after the highest values and spirit that enriched our own lives. Amen.
Today's reading is a poem entitled Message in Colors by Spanish poet Julia Sopatron. Here, in an impressionistic and sensory fashion, the writer tries to convey to us the kind of transformative nostalgia that is a spiritual celebration on the Day of the Dead in Mexico. Lit candles, faces, memories, and an entrance that's a rainbow, protection for the place of rest and meditation. Necklaces, marigolds, pre-Hispanic cadence, songs, paper medals, flames talking to the wind in the diverse language of the departed. It is the prime time of the celebration, or death's thread, threaded through time's needle. It is the decomposition of matter transformed into art. It is the final curtain awoken from death. Yes, an eternal dream of uncorrupt flowers and of celebration. It is death's lament fading away, and it is also respect made as tribute. Who could have imagined so much beauty on a tomb? Mole, glass of water, incense, salt, prayers, firecrackers, fruits, bread, music, ballads, poems, romantic songs, history praised, creativity expressed in its most raw form. And there are laments in purple, white, blue, and pink. It is a breath from grace, so heightened as to be kindled fire, that reveals the soul's presence in the darkness. Something like the flowering of martyrdom in flames, an arrangement of the dead, or the posthumous splendor of what one thinks is on the other side. In that place, everything is possible. Grief battles with life, and life wins. It is once again, for a little while, happiness. Playful tradition which overcomes reality. It was before these ornate grave sites when I knew that in that place, as in my heart, those that have departed return every year to remind us of their love, and that only love can save us.
Actually, we are blessed by these beautiful altars that were created for our Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead celebrations, last night here at church. Thank you to all who created them. Amidst of this explosion of colours, I'm feeling rather drab up here in my dark suit, with only my red tie for colour. It's the only thing that looks like it belongs up here. This time of year feels really busy. We just had Halloween, and this weekend we have the Day of the Dead celebrations. The election on Tuesday means that we are only 3 days away from the beginning of the 2012 presidential election. I know this election cycle was not long enough for most of us. The church year is in its full swing with lots of exciting activities happening here most days of the week. The relaxed days of summer seem like a distant memory as Thanksgiving plans start to coalesce. And I'm sorry to mention this, Christmas is just around the corner. Thank goodness for that extra hour we had last night with the clocks going back. We need all the time we can get. Yet time is a quantity we only have a finite amount of. Our own health concerns and those of others are a constant reminder that we are creatures of finite lives. We are particularly sensitive to these issues at this time, since many cultures honour the dead and honour and celebrate the dead at this time. The Mexican holiday of Day of the Dead is one such tradition. When I first came to the United States and encountered the Day of the Dead celebration, I naively thought it was just the Mexican version of Halloween. The proliferation of skeletons in various active poses and sugar skulls seemed to suggest a similar emphasis on the fearful and otherworldly aspects of Halloween. My assumption of any similarity to Halloween was mistaken. Day of the Dead celebrations focus on bringing family and friends together to remember and to honour those close to us who have died. In the poem Ron read earlier, we heard about the atmosphere, beauty, and celebratory nature of Day of the Dead tradition, as families gather at grave sites or in homes with altars similar to these ones. The altars contain mementos and other objects, such as flowers, food, and drink. You even see bottles of tequila in some altars. The intent is to encourage visits from the soul of the dead so they can hear the prayers, music, and stories recited in their honour. The commemoration of Day of the Dead has warm and pleasant overtones for the participants. In the words of the poem we heard, grief battles with life, and life wins. It is once again, for a little while, happiness and playful tradition which overcomes reality. The reality is death. But for a brief period, through community celebration, grief is transcended. This festive interaction between the living and the dead is a social ritual that helps the living to remember how enriched they were by the lives of those no longer alive. Our Halloween celebration is also based on the idea of the dead, also based on the idea of the dead being able to visit us at this time of year. The difference is the dead are seen as threatening to the living, therefore the tradition of wearing costumes to scare them away. What different approaches to the dead, one celebrating them, the other fearful of them. Halloween has no religious significance for most of us today, but the Day of the Dead has its roots in two strong religious traditions. The Day of the Dead celebration, and it is a celebration, has its roots back hundreds, some say thousands of years, to the indigenous groups in Mexico. These groups honoured their ancestors through gifts and stories. After the Spanish conquest of Mexico, the Christian missionaries saw these celebrations as sacrilegious and tried to banish the ritual. The Spanish had a fearful attitude towards the dead because they were still living with the memories of the great plagues of Europe that killed one-third of the population. This was in the late Middle Ages, and the dead were seen as signs of your own mortality and were believed to have spread the great plagues. After many years of unsuccessfully trying to end the practice, the Spanish Christians then decided to assimilate the celebration. They moved the indigenous celebration, which took most of the month of August. The Christians moved it to All Souls Day on November 2nd. All Souls Day is a Roman Catholic holiday that commemorates the memory of the dead. So So there is a tenuous connection of honouring the dead. Christianity, like other religions, has been very effective at co-opting indigenous holidays and making them Christian ones. The birth of Jesus on December 25th is widely recognised as the co-opting of the Roman solar holiday and not related to the actual birth of Jesus. The seeming coincidences of the Day of the Dead and All Souls Day are not God working anonymously, as some would claim, but the appropriation of a less powerful group by a more powerful group. Interestingly, the Day of the Dead celebration, as practiced by most people today, has little connections with the rituals of the Christian tradition and strong connections to the original ideals of the indigenous pre-Christian tradition. Sadly, like so many of our religious practices, there has been some co-option of the holiday by that most dominant of all our present religion, consumerism. The commercialization of holidays such as Christmas, Halloween, and Day of the Dead often take the important symbols of a religion and trivialize them as nothing more than products to be sold. This may explain why my first encounter with Day of the Dead, I could not see the distinction from the overt commercialism of Halloween. In the tradition of Day of the Dead, the significance of the skeletons and sugar skulls are their material symbolism. The skeletons are symbols for the dead family members who are no longer present, not to be feared, but to be loved and invited to join in the celebrations of their own lives. The specific activity that a skeleton is engaged in is usually the favourite activity of the deceased person being honoured. The desire to have some physical connection to a dead relative or friend is something I suspect that many of us can relate to. Many of us have keepsakes that remind us of people special to us, some of which might be in these altars. The other important aspect of Day of the Dead celebration, some spirits here. The other important aspect of the Day of the Dead celebration is the idea of the gifts the living could give to the dead to bring us closer to their spirit and help bring the spirit more fully into our lives. Of course, in liberal religion, we need to do some translation to bring this idea into our own context. But I think it's a potentially rich way of thinking. What gifts can we give of ourselves today that would honour and bring us closer to our departed friends and loved ones? Can we live our lives to honour those who, through their love, values and support, made us who we are today? Being a liberal religion, each of us needs to explore these questions for ourselves, but perhaps hearing my own struggles with these questions might help you. I mentioned earlier that this tie might be the only item belonging to me that belongs in these altars, and I of course was referencing the red colour in contrast to my dark austere suit. Remember, we Unitarian Universalists are religiously descended from the Puritans, who were not famed for their bold colour sense. This tie also belongs on these altars for its symbolism and what it means to me. I was given this tie 22 years ago for my brother's wedding by my father. It was his tie, and he gave it to me as a family gift. My father died unexpectedly in January of this year. Like many of us here who have experienced the loss of someone close to us, and especially perhaps a parent whom we're close to, it's a disorienting experience. A seemingly ever-present pillar of your life is removed. It is painful and it's destabilizing. This tie for me is an important connection to the memory of my dad. My dad was an honest, hard-working and plain-talking person. He was bright and inquisitive, but not college-educated, and liked people to speak in plain language, grounded in what he called the real world. I remind myself to keep my words honest, respectful, and accessible. My dad always loved a good argument and would often disagree with me just for the discussion. Family discussions around the dinner table have always been a huge part of my family culture and were as long as my father was alive. I believe the constant questionings and discussions in my family home set me in my long and winding path to find a home in our Unitarian Universalist tradition. When I question with honesty, sincerity, respect, and clarity, then I believe I am closer to the spirit of my dad while serving important religious principles. Davidson, in a sermon a few weeks ago, gave a wonderful example of living life as if all the great people of history were watching, living under the gaze of eternity, I think he called it. As daunting as though that sounds, it does seem to be powerful guidance for living a moral life. I also believe it is in keeping with the spirit of liberal religion to consider some of the people who are watching us to be our dead relatives and friends who we most admired and were most influential on us. When we invoke the memory of them to guide or motivate us in our lives, then we are invoking their spirit, and by doing so, we are honouring them. I believe that this is what May Sarton was saying in the earlier poem that I read. Now the dead move through all of us, still glowing, as the lost human voices speak through us and blend our complex love, our mourning without end. We are engaging with both the inspiration and the sadness of those important people who are no longer with us physically. At the heart of grief and mourning is the struggle we have dealing with multiple emotions simultaneously. The joy that person brought us in our own lives and the sadness at their absence. The anger at what is seemingly unresolved and fear of how we will live life without them. Our mourning does not end, since they continue to influence us every time we consider their example. As part of the Day of the Dead celebration, many Mexican families tell stories about the dead person each year to keep their memory and influence alive. I think there is great value to this. In our religion, the memorial services fill this formal role on a one-time basis, shortly after the death. We do not have a religious tradition of regularly telling a person's story. What I decided I wanted to do for my dad became clear to me when I was clearing through photographs when we were preparing to move here from San Francisco in June. I was looking at some photographs and I found one of my dad when he was 2 years old, and a photograph of when I was last with him just over a year ago. I looked up at him in both photographs and thought, what really connects these two completely different people? The fresh-faced two-year-old boy in 1932 and the haggard face 75 years later of a person who'd lived for a long time with illness. What became clear to me is that it is our stories, experiences, and relationships that connect the people in the two photographs. I realised that I only knew a small portion about my dad's life. The father-son relationship, though intimate and important, is a limited lens through which to view any human being. Now, being a father myself, I'm acutely aware of the narrow view my 5-year-old daughter has of me. I'm a mode of transportation, in a rather large climbing frame, but primarily I'm the authority figure who denies her all things fun. I don't believe her when she says I denied her any candy on Halloween. It's not true. I allowed her one piece. To broaden my own view of my father, I've undertaken a project to write his eulogy, not from my own perspective or people I know well, but from those I do not know well and had a relationship with my dad that was very different from my own. His friends when he was in the Air Force as a young man stationed in Germany. The people who were his apprentices at work, who I did not meet till they came to his funeral. And his brother in Canada, who knew him throughout his life, and especially as a young boy. This will help me get a fuller perspective beyond just his later life as a father, and perhaps gain insights into why he was the person he was. When a person dies, we often freeze our relationships with them at the time of their death and not remember the changes that happened in the course of their life with us. I believe that we can continue to change our relationship even with those who are dead by getting a fuller understanding of who they are. As long as they're alive, there's this vain hope that they may change to become the person we want them to be. 76 years wasn't enough. Perhaps in his 77th year, he'll become the person I want. The eternal human spirit, especially when it comes, it's about someone else changing and not me. We all know how hard it is to change. When a person dies, we give up any hope of them changing. But if we choose, we can change our own beliefs about that person. Perhaps what we wanted them to change was just not that important, and we choose to focus after their death on those important eternal attributes of the person that are important to us. Their love for us despite our imperfections, their confidence in us despite our own doubts, or their friendship despite us sometimes feeling unworthy of it. The death of someone allows us to reframe what we remember about their life, for good and for bad, and perhaps allows us to see the essence of the person beyond the often trivial disagreements of everyday life. Despite the inevitability of death for many of us, it is not a subject that is discussed much in our society. There is often avoidance until it is thrust upon us by our own losses. Many people, religious and those who believe themselves to be non-religious, often turn to religion or religious leaders at such time. Religion is where we try to find some meaning and comfort about death. Different religions have different ideas about what happens to us when we die. Many propose some form of existence beyond this life, a hope that we will be reunited in some form with those who have died before us. I understand the desire for this, but to me, what happens beyond death is a mystery. And perhaps it is good that it stays a mystery. This allows grief-stricken people to find hope in difficult times in different ways. I have seen the solace and strength that friends of mine have gained from believing they would be reunited with a deceased child or a young spouse who died too soon. This is not a denial of death, but a belief in something beyond death. I personally struggle to share their beliefs, but I cannot be certain what happens when we die. And at times I even feel a little envious of the comfort their beliefs give them. What I can be certain of is that death is a transformational experience for those close to the deceased. Our lives are changed as we are reminded of our own mortality. We are finite beings with a limited time in life, and it matters what we do with this life. I have heard the Spanish expression mañana described as meaning something might get done tomorrow, or maybe next week, or maybe next month. I heard someone being asked if we had any equivalent of that in Scotland, and he replied, we had no word to convey that sense of urgency. Urgency is not a good way of determining what is important. Our lives seem to be surrounded by urgency. Urgency of creating Halloween costumes, making Thanksgiving plans, and yes, here I go again, buying Christmas presents, and even writing sermons. While death gives us a finite time, we should react to this restriction by prioritizing what is really and truly important to us. Mañana can be thought of as something never been started because of procrastination. Alternatively, it can mean something that will not be completed in our own lifetime. I suspect what is really most important is not what we get done before we die, but those projects that we begin that will transcend our deaths. For example, the work we do in community to address the social ills of poverty, violence, hunger, racism, and sexism. This work to heal our world will not be completed in my lifetime. Improved, I hope and pray, but not completed. By building institutions such as this church with our time and money, we hope this work and the promotion of our religious values to others will continue after we are gone. This is legacy work, since it transcends our own lifespan. I talked earlier about how a focus of Day of the Dead was gifts whose purpose was to bring the spirits of the dead closer to us. Our legacy work is the reverse of this. What will we dedicate ourselves to now that will be a gift to others when we are dead? Our time in this life is finite, but our legacy and what we choose it to be is not. How we preserve the memory and values of those who came before us and pass on our values and spirit to others are perhaps the most important questions we will address in our lives. By acknowledging the reality of death and the losses we have in common, we may find what is most meaningful in our life and worth passing on to future generations. And when we do that, we are honouring the full human experience and celebrating life's longing for itself. Please join me in the responsive benediction, which is in your order of service. We leave this sacred time together. Our world needs us and the spirit we carry forth.
Let us become alive, the truth, and the healing that we seek.
Amen.